welcome to Flipping the Field, the college football podcast about all of college football. I'm your host, Patrick Mayhorn. I am joined by my recently rap-dissed co-host, Ryan Donnelly. Ryan, how are you recovering from being dissed via a rap beef? I know that you've been entrenched in one recently.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, unfortunately, I can't deny the footage. I have been popping ass on stage with Sexy Red.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in 4K. What can I do about it?
Yeah. That's such a great line. We love that. We love that.
Dude, it's really good.
Yeah.
Do we want to get the official, can I get the official Patrick Mayhorn take on the Drake versus Kendrick rap beef? Do you have a stance?
I think that Drake should be treated the same way that Jeffrey Epstein was treated. That's basically my entire stance on anything regarding Drake. I don't care. Like it could be anybody on the other side, and I'm still gonna side with anybody. I don't really care for the man. I don't have a lot of fond thoughts about him.
I find him deeply embarrassing. I was making myself laugh thinking about like doing something on this podcast. I guess I'll just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was gonna, you heard the end of the song, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you gonna repeat? You're gonna sing that word for word?
No. I was just like laughing to myself thinking about, we don't want to hear you say Mayhorn no more.
That would be fun.
Or we don't want to hear you say Patrick no more. Something to that effect.
Something.
I was thinking
like
about tweeting it, but I thought, I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah. Right. It would be better to hear. Yeah, it would be better for everybody to hear it directly from you rather than seeing it typed out. I think it's you get that.
Yeah, well, I think lower visibility on this than my tweets.
Well, what are you gonna do? There's simply no way to use one for the other, and we're not going to. So quit asking. We've got a little bit of a variety hour here. We've got all sorts of stuff that we're going to pick through. We've got several stories that came out in college football this week that we're going to kind of read the executive summary of. We're not going to read through these entire stories. I would say that it's, once again, I mean, we're still waiting on the first good national college football story ever written. It's never been done before.
There's always just new stories. They're never good.
Yeah, it's just, there's so much is not happening all of the time, and people have to write about how nothing is happening and how guys are meeting in a hotel room or something like that, because they have nothing else to do. So we're going to talk about that. We've got, of course,
a Drake social life?
Uh-huh. I mean, it could be. Maybe he's involved in some way. But we've got our I would say growing enemy of the podcast, Ross Dellinger. We've got a story from him. We're not really going to talk about the ESPN reporting all that much, but there was some ESPN reporting. We're going to talk about the lengthy story from The Athletic on Colorado's warland style execution of 53 players or whatever it was from last season. They were all killed tragically, and everybody is and Dion is getting online to say, well, you died like a bitch or something like that, which is very funny. So we're gonna talk about that as well. And then
I like the college football players who don't get cut.
Yeah. And we have a little game to break that up that we're gonna get to here in a little bit. But before we do any of that, before we jump in to another week of just a bunch of shit, really, in college football. It seems like it's pretty much just all, we're kind of plumbers at this point, just trying to unclog the fucking sport. Before we do that, I'll tell you real quick about meetatmidfield.com. That is our college football website. We have premium written content. We have premium episodes of this podcast, as well as the podcast that you do with Kevin on Ohio State, High Street Freaks. We have the message board is sort of the front porch of our university. You show up at the message board and you get to see what all we have to offer. The message board continues to roll. It's awesome. It's great in season, but it's great off season as well. More stuff, I would say, coming soon for Meet at Midfield. You and I are getting into the process of starting preview season in earnest. I'm getting into the process. You're deep into it. but lots of good stuff coming there soon. We're very excited about some of the stuff that we have planned for 2024 preview content. We're going to do a little bit different, but some the same. It's going to be really fun. If you're not already subscribed, you can go on over there and subscribe. You support the show. You support us, the site. Just go to meetatmidfield.com and you get access to all of that cool stuff. You get access, of course, to the premium episodes of this show, as well as anything in the backlog, which there's plenty of it. I don't know the exact number. There's a lot. I don't know how many people are going back to listen to like in-season premium podcast episodes of this show, but if you are, you're a trooper. Shout out to you. Also, stay away from me. I don't want to meet you in person. You are a psycho, but you're a psycho in a positive way, I suppose.
Yeah.
You get access to all that stuff as well. Meetatmidfield.com is the website. Go on over there. We would love to have you. You want to tell people about Homefield real quick?
Oh yeah, our beloved sponsor, Homefield Apparel. They are our one, our true, our only sponsor. They have the internet's best vintage collegiate apparel. They have a lot more than collegiate apparel now too. They have NFL gear. They have NASCAR gear. They have some other shit cooking. They have like the expanse out of football. You have a lot of basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, women's basketball, all kinds of great stuff. They're shooting shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, t-shirts, joggers, hats, whatever you can fucking think of. Homefield is already, either already has made it or is thinking about making it. Those boys are going off. They are making some really cool shit. They're great people too. We love working with them. They're really, really wonderful to work with and make our lives a lot easier. I highly, highly recommend purchasing from Homefield Apparel. If somehow you have never done it before, you can do so by using the code MEETATMIDFIELD at checkout for 15% off of your first purchase.
Yeah. Yeah. If somehow you've not already purchased Homefield, you can, and you probably should. it's a good thing to do. Go on over there, homefieldapparel.com, use code MEETATMIDFIELD for 15% off your first purchase, as Ryan said. All right. You ready? Let's jump into this. First up here, we've got a story from ESPN that we're not going to read and that we really do not care about or really lend any sort of credence to, but from the dynamic duo themselves, the LeBron and Dwayne Wade of annoying reports, Pete Thamel and Dan Murphy. I don't know where Schlaball is. We need him back. They've got him in the hole. They've got Schlaball. He's in one of those prisons where he's down under the ground and they've got the bars up above him and he's doing pull-ups. He's getting so beef. His legs are broken, but his arms are strong. We believe in you, Mark. You can get out of there. You will do this. But he's not on this one. We got Pete and Dan on this one. Headline, college sports leaders in deep talks to settle NIL antitrust case versus NCAA. I think that's pretty much all you really need to know about the story, because there's not a whole lot else in here other than just saying that over and over again. I'll let you go on this one, because like I think you have stronger feelings against this than I do. I don't really think that this is like gonna happen. I don't really think that it's real. I have no reason to believe that the NCAA can do anything at all until proven otherwise. Where are you at with this, and why are we kind of brushing this to the side?
Yeah, I mean, like the money quotes on this are all about how they're just preliminary meetings and that there's no deal imminent.
Yeah.
And that like they might share details with university leaders soon. and like the rest of it's based off of like one interview with like a college radio station that Trev Alberts gave, where he said they could be adding $15 to $20 million in their budgets for a new expense category. Like that's basically all the underpinning facts on this.
Yeah. There's like, I think there's one other guy quoted in here, and it's like the lawyer for three of the four suits. And he's basically quoted as saying like, yeah, I mean, that would make sense if they settle, 'cause they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Okay. That's yeah. I guess. Yeah. That's probably,
yeah. Talk your shit.
Yeah. That's probably fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also saying that individual schools can opt in to share revenue, but they could also choose to share less, but not more. So there's nothing here. It's just a whole lot of things of like, there are lawyers talking about potential follow-up actions by universities to a potential lawsuit settlement for an undecided case that isn't moving forward like very rapidly at all. It's going to court in January 2025. So we're 7 months out from court. Come on. I don't give a fuck. I don't buy this. I don't think the NCAA is going to, like, basically what they're saying here is if they came to Like, if they had to pay out the damages here, it would cost each school $15 to $20 million apiece. I'm sure some higher burden would be borne by bigger schools, whatever, yada, yada. And then if that happens, they could choose to implement revenue sharing afterwards for paying more out. Why would they do that voluntarily before they're forced to? I don't know. I just don't buy any of this. I think it's going to basically, like, if that happens and they have to grant revenue sharing, why aren't we just already at the employee model? It's like we're steps away from it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think they're going to give in on this. They absolutely have to. I don't think they're going to, you know, settle on this earlier than is necessary. I don't think, I just don't buy this story. I also don't give a fuck about it. It's so far from any kind of concrete news or info that I just don't give a shit.
Yeah, this feels like it is in traditional NCAA style. This feels like it is headed for the next story that is pumped up as like, oh, big news report here from so-and-so is that the NCAA is launching an exploratory committee towards this settlement or something like that, or towards what the revenue sharing model would look like. That's the next step in this, and that's still nothing. An exploratory committee or a task force or whatever the fuck they want to call it is still nothing. It is still just an excuse for administrators to take a vacation, which is what the NCAA does. That is the only, that's the only process that it currently has, which is that it launches a group that goes to Dallas. That's pretty much the only thing that they're doing right now. And so I would guess that that's going to be
somehow always Dallas. Also.
Yeah, it's somehow always. I don't know what it is about Dallas that they love so much. I feel like if I had a, you know, if I had a job like that where I could just sort of go on vacation to wherever, I would probably pick a different city other than Dallas. I don't really know. I don't really know why they're doing that. It's not like
yeah, it has America's top parking lots.
Yeah, it's not like anybody's going to be reporting on the amount of money spent for these groups to go do nothing. That doesn't happen because the the people who would realistically be able to report on that are babies, and they're not going to do that. They're not going to risk their access level to Charlie Baker for the sake of reporting on the amount of frivolous spending that the NCAA does for the sake of nothing, for no benefit, other than Gene Smith gets to go on vacation or something like that. And so I would guess that that's going to be next, and that's still nothing. That's still not a story. Launching a committee is not doing anything. It is made up. It's fake. And so I think that probably about covers it. I'm really looking forward to hearing that they're forming a new group. That'll be fun. We love that.
Looking forward to whenever they... Well, I don't know if you saw that The Intercept killed a story this week about the guest list at Bohemian Grove.
Okay.
I wonder if that's opening up a potential new venue for the NCAA. New annual meetings at Bohemian Grove for the university chancellors.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening.
That would be cool. That would be really fun, I think, for all involved. They would like that. I think they would get along. I don't think it would be a hard cultural fit there. I just fit right in. Yeah, fuck those guys. That'll be really fun. We're looking forward to that, and we're going to take it very seriously, just like we did this. We're going to give it the appropriate amount of attention, which is an entire episode, I'm sure. We won't just brush it off as nothing like we do with everything else that's nothing that comes from this group. Next up here, speaking of committees, we love committees. We love to gather in a hotel room or perhaps a convention hall or just some standard room that we can describe as being like lush or something like that. We've got a story here from, as I mentioned earlier, quickly rising on the list of flipping the field most wanted reporters, guys who we really just want to see behind bars. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports writes here with the headline, "The expanded 12-team college football playoff is here, and it already has problems." That's a fun headline. He's having a good time at work. I'm going to read a little bit from this here. I've picked out some of the more, I don't even know that interesting is the right word, some of the more reprehensible stuff that's in here. I'll preface this by saying, like, it doesn't really take an expert to see what Ross is doing here. He is writing an op-ed on behalf of Greg Sankey, basically. And I think Sankey is, like, the only person actually quoted within this story. It is essentially, it's an opinion piece from Ross that has been given the sheen of reporting or really anything of the actual formal journalism world, through quoting basically one guy who is obviously dictating the opinions that are within the story. So it starts here, as Ross loves to do, setting the scene of just an absolutely not necessary place to describe, just a nondescript region that he has decided to include in his story. Starts inside the college football playoff meeting room at a resort hotel in the posh community of what is this, Las Colinas? I don't know how to, I'm going to go with Las Colinas. Mm. The industry's
very
most
good.
Okay, the industry's most powerful leaders played a game, a bracket game.
That's
not a thing. He's like setting it up as if like, oh yeah, they played the bracket game. They were playing the knockout game. Like, what are you talking about? That's nothing. Why would you phrase it like that? Doesn't make any sense. Continues, gathered around a table, the FBS commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director projected a 12-team playoff bracket by applying the 2022 rankings. 8 months away from a historic 2024 college football playoff selection day, the inaugural expanded playoff, the bracketing exercise commenced as a way to show executives the matchups, trends, and perhaps even issues produced with a new format.
Wow.
Ryan, real quick, before we get any deeper into this.
Brackets, trends, and issues?
Yeah, we got all three. You know we got all three of those. We got brackets, we got trends, we got matchups, we got issues. Do you think maybe that this year they should have done this earlier than right now? Do you think? does this seem like something that maybe they should have done before they agreed to this expansion? It seemed... 8 months from now, you guys are going to have to do this for real. Is this the best time to be going back to 2022 and seeing, well, what does this look like? How would this be? It seems a little bit like you guys don't have anything else to do right now, which is troubling because I would think that there's a lot to do right now.
No, they're hanging out.
Yeah.
What are they modeling? Let's see. Tell me more about it.
Yeah. So a couple hours later, it says, a handful of reporters were ushered into the room to do the same, sitting in the exact chairs in which commissioners previously resided, as outgoing CFP director Bill Hancock guided the room through the process. Just weird.
You know, it smells crazy in there.
He just includes weird details. He likes weird things. Just a strange guy. In front of us, a projection screen flickered to life with a bracket, a 2022 12-team playoff based on the rankings that year and considering realignment moves. Continues, first-round matchups at on-campus sites of the better seed included number 8 seed Tennessee hosting number 9 seed Kansas State, number 12 seed Tulane at number 5 TCU, number 10 Southern Cal at number 7 Alabama, and number 11 Penn State at number 6 Ohio State. The latter is a rematch. That's problem number one. As it stands now, there is no college football playoff protocol on avoiding first round rematches. Okay, I'm going to take a pause here as well. I would think maybe that's something you could be working on right now, rather than modeling what a 12-team playoff is. I think that maybe that would be something you would be working to address instead of like, well, this is what 12 teams would look like if we put them in a bracket. Here's the design of the bracket and who would be in them. And you have like a 96-year-old athletic director sitting in some chair just like slowly dying looking at this and it's just so valuable for him that he did this. It's so good that they flew all these guys out to a resort hotel so that they could look at what 12 teams on a projector looks like. I would think maybe you should be working on the, you know, protocols for avoiding first round rematches.
Here's the thing. I think they're already kind of fucked on it though, because
good.
I don't know. Like in my mind, if you're admitting that you're going to manipulate the standings to avoid first round rematches, then the standings already don't matter. Like I know we all know that, right? I understand that we all get that. But you can't have any kind of public veneer that these are objective rankings or the 12 best teams in the country in order, or there's some kind of rules to it. And you're just like, ah, fuck it. We can flop 6 and 7. Who really cares? Whatever happens, happens. Like, that's crazy. You can't do that.
Yeah.
That has a lot of impact on like downline games. That's not a legitimate playoff system. If you're doing that, that's ridiculous. So, I mean, like, the answer is, if you want to avoid this, you could just have some kind of cohesive overruling body that does manage, you know, standardization of schedules and equal rules for all teams to make the playoff and, you know, kind of pre-selected rules so you can avoid things like this. But they're just obviously not going to do that. They have no interest in or power to do that. So instead, they're going to have this sham committee be like, well, this matchup was cool. We can stat one again. But this matchup, I don't know about that one. I don't like that one very
much.
This is going to be a completely arbitrary manipulation of the bracket for no good benefit.
Yeah, and as this story kind of alludes to, but doesn't really allude to all that much, it mentions the NCAA basketball tournament. The NCAA basketball tournament has protocols in place to avoid rematches in the first round, second round, third round, even depending on the number of times that a team played during the season, which it can do because there are four of each seed and you can move those teams around. That is sort of the problem that you bump up against when you only have a 12 team field. Is that, like, yeah, the rankings do become very important. It does become a very important thing that you have, you know, if you're the number 6 team, that you are represented as that and that you play the number 11 team or, you know, whatever. And so it's kind of hard to move them around in the same way that you can when you're dealing with 64 spots in a bracket. That's not ideal. And the story kind of continues here making a point that I don't know is actually really all that accurate. Ross writes, this is a simple, solvable problem. Is it? Is it a simple, solvable problem? I don't know that it's super simple or solvable without doing like what you said, which is just arbitrarily deciding which rematches are and aren't acceptable.
Right. It's so simple and solvable. They're already discussing going to 16 teams to avoid this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
before
great.
They ever play with 12 teams.
Yeah. like the NCAA basketball tournament selection, and like I said, it mentions it, the college football playoff could implement a protocol requiring first round games to feature two teams from separate conferences when possible. That's a big when possible. That when possible is carrying a lot of weight there. With such a small field and conferences steadily expanding, there may be times where it is not possible. God, he just this sentence is just a mess. I know, like, I think people like sometimes when we critique the actual writing of these stories, he includes after writing small field 12 in parentheses. You've already said 12 team playoff like 20 fucking times. Who's this for? You mean it's 12? It's the whole goddamn story's about how it's 12. And then he says, there may be times where it is not possible. Times would be when. It's not where. Time is not a place where you can go. It's a setting that, you know, time is in. Like, when? may not be time.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're hearing my critiques, don't read any of my articles. Uh-huh. Don't have any commentary on what I say. Yeah.
I care about this stuff a little bit more than you do, because I have been, I've been warped badly by working at a newspaper. It has permanently impacted my brain in a way where I cannot read anything without picking fault in it. Story continues, unfortunately. But for the most part, it is, regarding the that it would be possible. I don't really know that that's true. such a protocol is necessary because modeling shows that this format, combined with realignment moves, produces a lot of rematches. I'm troubled by that. That's concerning that you say that after saying that it's not going to be a problem. It kind of sounds like it will be a problem. An entire conference dissolved, the Big 12 and SEC swelled to 16 teams, and the ACC and Big 10 grew to 18. While considering realignment, there would have been 7 first-round conference versus conference rematches over the 10 years of the college football playoff, and then he editorializes here, far too many. That sounds like a problem, Ross. It sounds like a simple, solvable issue. That's a lot of fucking rematches that you would have to avoid.
It sounds like it's happening most years.
Yeah, that's 70% of the time we're dealing with this. That's That's not rare.
I wonder, by the way, if we may find that there's any, I don't know, bias or certain conferences that may get rewarded with higher seeds to avoid their rematches, but other ones maybe would not get that same benefit of the doubt and could be moved down to benefit other leagues.
Yeah.
I wonder if that will happen at all in practice.
I mean, I can't imagine that the NCAA or the College Football Playoff Committee would do something like that. They've never done that before or anything like that. They've never sacrificed an entire power conference for the sake of the SEC and Big Ten. They wouldn't do that. Of course not.
No.
Historically established conference, they simply wouldn't overlook those guys. They wouldn't pass up an unbeaten ACC champion so that Alabama can go to the playoff. What are you talking about? They would never do that.
No.
It continues here. Even commissioners acknowledged as much after their bracketing exercise. Even these fucking morons could see it.
I hate this guy, dude. I hate him so much.
And he quotes Greg Sankey here saying, a lot of rematches. That's a good quote to include. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Greg. Sankey evaded repeated questions about the College Football Playoff instituting a protocol to avoid rematches, citing the current policy. What is that? What is the current policy?
What's the current policy? Are you explaining it?
That there's not one? Is that a policy? Our current policy is that we have no policy. These guys are so fucking cool.
Fucking morons.
Oh my god. But this is an easy answer. Yes, avoid rematches. He didn't provide any solution. He said it's a simple, solvable problem. And then he carried on for the next four paragraphs saying, yeah, we should probably do this. Well, anyway.
What an asshole, dude. What an absolute asshole.
Who approved this? Oh, my God. It continues here. There are plenty of other problems with a 5+7 model. I'll note here, he lists two other problems in the rest of the story, and one of them gets one paragraph at the end and barely has any attention paid to it. So there are plenty of other problems, including one that I can think of. And the other problems that he continues on to say here, mostly, again, this is where we're kind of just seeing Greg Sankey get his greedy little mitts on this guy. Quote, not a quote, story continues, quoting the story. Teams in the top four of the final rankings that did not win their conference will be forced to play a first-round game while weaker conference champions earn a bye. Is this a problem? It depends on who you ask. One of the format's goals was to keep value in the regular season by rewarding conference champions. For instance, in 2022, fourth-ranked Ohio State, a non-champion, would have been seeded number 6, while Big 12 champion Utah, ranked number 8, would have gotten the number 4 seed and a first-round bye. In 2021, number 12 Pitt, the ACC champion, would have gotten a bye as the number 4 seed while being ranked lower than 8 at-large teams. The rankings are made up. You guys made the rankings. They're not real. Does he think that the rankings are real? That it's like, this is set in stone. This is objectively the number 4 team. It's just it's just rankings. They're not real. It's not an actual measure of a team's importance or value. It's made up. What are we doing?
I do not think that they know or acknowledge that. I genuinely do not think they do.
You set the system. You did this, and you're the ones who decided that you wanted to keep doing the rankings while doing this. That's the problem that you've invented entirely for yourselves. The rankings are made up. They're not real. It's a TV show. That's the entire reason that you do them. You guys made the system where the champions are the top 4 seeds. Nobody made you do that. This is you. You're the only ones making these decisions. I didn't do that. Don't blame me. I'm not. I don't understand why this is a problem. This is their own idea. They did this. It doesn't seem like it would be that big of an issue. You didn't win your conference championship. You should have won your conference championship, and then you would have gotten the bye. I don't know what else to tell you. Win your conference championship, and this won't be a problem.
Well, the problem is, The problem is that essentially they got rid of a flawed but at least partially objective ranking system with the BCS, right? Like the BCS was not perfect. They included that dumbass coaches poll, and not all the computer models were awesome and rewarded style points too much. But it was a manner of an objective model, right? It had some objective criteria that teams could perform to, and it wasn't all wins and losses. You know, there are other things involved. But it did have some objective criteria. They replaced that with an entirely subjective committee that could pick and choose which criteria they wanted to apply in a given year, and often did so to benefit teams from one or a small handful of conferences in a given season. And now that those teams have had a decade of getting increased revenue, better recruiting, more chances at championships, because of that system, there is no longer any desire to return to objectivity or some kind of standardization. That's that they can't put the genie back in the bottle because they've already given them a decade of subjective favors. And so now, like, yeah, you could solve this. You could very easily solve this by getting rid of your subjective rankings and going back to computer models or you know, simple wins and losses or things of that nature, but they will not and cannot do that.
Yeah, of course not, because that would, yeah, that, like you said, they've already, genie's out of the bottle. You can't go back on that now. These guys want, they're going to always want more. There's no amount that you can give these guys that would be satisfying to them, because there's always the potential for more.
They gave the mouse the fucking cookie.
Yeah. He's going to ask for another one. What did you think was going to happen? That's what happens. They're not, oh, wow, thank you. I'm satisfied. Yeah. Thank you. Like, I gave my cat wet food last week, and after he, like, scarfed it down, he was, like, following me all over the house, like, asking for more wet food. It's like, I just gave you some, even though I knew that was what was going to happen, because that's what happens when you give anybody anything. they're going to get then want more of it, and you certainly can't cut off the hose. You can't, like, that's not going to happen. And so, yeah, you've done this to,
especially when the hose pays your salary and is a cartel, yeah, that can destroy you at any given moment by taking away their support for you.
Yeah, like, they're not, that's not, you've done,
you exist to do the dirty work that benefits that cartel.
Yeah, don't come complaining about it to me that it's hard. I don't need to hear that. I don't need to hear Ross Dellinger, you know, yeah, saying that, well, this is such a difficult problem. You've done this. It was you guys. I have nothing to do with this. I don't like it in the first place. I like, you did this to you. It was you.
We protested the whole way. Yeah. Like,
it's just that not only do they have to destroy the sport, everybody has to feel bad for them all the time. You can't just be they don't want to be the villains, which they very clearly and openly are. They also have to be maligned in some way, that there be some other force that's outside of their control that they didn't set into motion is you know, stopping them from doing what they want to do, which is just not accurate. And I again, like, we've talked about, every time we talk about one of these stories, we come to the same conclusion of, like, who is this for? Who's getting something from this? Because it's not like they have to make a plea to the public to get something changed. We can't vote on college football. It's not, I have no input in this. It's not a democratically elected position. It's like, I could just sit here and talk about it on a podcast.
What if they did have, here's a really funny idea.
Uh-huh.
What if when they go to the 16-team playoff, which I'm sure will happen very soon, what if they had one of the 15 teams, or one of the 16 teams was a fan vote team? MLB All-Star team.
Yeah.
You just get to pick the team that's most fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, well, honestly, just expand to all 16 teams. It's ranked choice voting. You have to go, everybody in America is expected to go and vote on who they think should be in the college football playoff.
What do you think is, like, okay, if there had to, I'm sorry, I'm just going to totally derail this for a second to probably get into a longer conversation.
Yeah.
But if you were told by President Joe Biden, you were brought into Sleepy Joe's office.
Okay.
And you were told, hey, we're not allowed to change it away from a subjective committee.
Okay.
However, you do get to pick how the committee is formed and who is on it.
Okay.
What do you think is the best, what are the best results? How could you gerrymander a committee to get the best results for the sport of college football?
I'm doing jury duty rules. I'm bringing all of the borderline teams in, and I'm letting them pick a jury that they think is fair and representative, and then we're gonna do a full on like truly random selection of the population, and I'm gonna have those people vote on it. That's how I'm doing it.
Okay, that's funny. I was thinking that it's kind of like you know how when you decide to become like a priest or a monk that you have to like give up all of your worldly possessions and go join a seminary or a monastery. I think it's something like that where I take a group of, I don't know, like we're struggling for journalism jobs in this country.
Yeah.
You take 100 journalism graduates.
Okay.
And you make them spend an entire calendar year. It starts in January of like that season. Or I guess it starts in February to account for. No, January is fine. January's fine. And they have to grind tape all year. They have to learn about like which analytics are good, which ones are bad, which statistics are actually, you know, demonstrative of team success, how recruiting rankings factor in, stuff like that. Things that actually work and are indicative of quality and are fair. I have 100 of them.
Okay.
And they each have a closed ballot. That's not true. It's not a closed ballot. It's closed to each other. They're not influenced by each other. They don't speak to each other the entire time.
Yeah.
They do not meet. They can call their family and friends. If they speak about college football, they are shot. They're not allowed to.
Yeah. Calls are monitored, of course.
Calls are monitored.
I'm bringing in in addition to this, we're going to bring in a strong team of former SIDs who can watch sternly over every interview that they give.
Yes.
They can give you the eye when you ask a question that they don't really like.
And essentially, afterwards, the public rates their performance. Like you have ranked choice voting, where you rank the 100 best, like how I do with like the AP poll every week, where I point out the idiot of the week. Everyone gets the access to do that.
Yeah,
and like the worst 25 are eliminated from the committee. Mm. The other 75 are brought back for the next year, and we keep that process going.
Okay, yeah, I like that. I think we could even maybe, I don't know that like downsize the team necessarily, because I do like the idea of like 100 guys who have just been, their lives have just been taken over. We're forcing them to live in a college football monastery where they can only watch football.
A lot of them would like that. Like, come on, you guys don't want to build real relationships. Yeah,
it doesn't like, sound that bad, right? Like there are worse things.
A lot of these guys, they don't want to develop personalities, right? They just want to talk about like their favorite fast food chain or like, did Red Robin get worse this year? Like, that's what you guys want to do. Like, when you have your personal hour in your podcast, it's like, I like beer. You know, beer's pretty good. That's, like, the whole thing you guys do. Like, come on. You're just trying to have something to be a person. You don't actually want to do that.
Yeah.
So we just remove the false choice. Just be a football freak.
Yeah, I think that would be fine. I think another option is like you take, I'm granted like a group of various like Navy SEAL style operators essentially. I have like a bunch of them, and I just send them all out to the different conventions where like coaches or like, advanced analytics types or writers or whoever, wherever they gather, and we're just, you know, we're sort of body snatching a couple of them from every convention. And we are kidnapping them, and we are bringing them into a monastery, and they will be, you know, they'll be taken care of. It's sort of a prison style system where you get some outside time once a day. You know, you get they get their.
That's the other thing too. There is mandatory weight training. You have to.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. But like they're fed, they get a sufficient amount of like craft beer and whiskey to make them happy and things like that. They all have the Adderall prescriptions that they need to be continued and things like that. You know, they're taken care of. They have conjugal visits once a month, I'll say. I'll be generous. I'll say once a month. And most of them they go unused, but they don't stack because that could be a problem. And so if you don't use it, that's it. It's done. And I don't think that it would really be that big of a problem. I think they would like it. It would be enriching for them, and it would make for a better committee than the one that we currently have.
And they would have the time to watch they would have time to watch every game.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, they better.
If we limit their outside communications, they don't have to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
They don't have to be seeing live score updates. Like, no, you're watching every game sequentially all year.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think we have made a real version of what is called the Sickos Committee. I think we've done an actual version of that, which is not good.
If there's an actual version, yeah. I would support it.
Yeah, we would be taking the name and then we would be taking the guys who do that to court. And we would also be, we'd be sort of taking those guys for all that they're worth, which is, I would guess, probably not very much, but it's the principle of
yeah.
So yeah, we would be doing that as well, strong arming them out of there.
And also, by the way, one last thing: they're all armed at all times, and with swords and plate mail. Not
okay,
guns.
Yeah, guns could get and yeah. That could
if
get
they
dangerous.
Find, yeah, if they find one of their colleagues to be objectionable enough as like an evaluator, they can challenge them to a duel.
Okay.
Kind of like how the system worked in Drumline.
Yeah.
You ever watched Drumline?
Yes.
Yeah, kind
absolutely.
Of like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've watched Drumline a lot. I watched Drumline a ton
Me
when
too,
I was a
dude.
Kid. Great movie.
I used to own it on DVD when I was in like middle school.
Hell yeah. That's a banger movie. That's a great, like one of the first real movies that you watch as a kid. That's a good one. Yeah, we love Drumline. It's like always on. Is it BET that it's always on? Like pretty much any time you want to watch Drumline, it's on BET or something. I think it was that. It was that or one of the other channels that's like in like the 50s on the cable guide. When you're like, I don't really want to go to the 50s very often, but then you go and it's like, oh, Drumline's on. Turn on Drumline. Drumline is on, and so is Speed. I'm gonna watch one of the two. That would be fun.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that would be cool. And maybe there's a system like if you do get voted off, you know, Survivor style. I don't know how Survivor works, but it seems like there's a voting aspect of it. Mm-hmm. If you do get voted off, it's sort of a ritual suicide kind of thing, where like you don't just go back to your regular life after that. You know too much. You've been on the inside. You have no life outside of this, and so you are sort of expected to go to the 50-yard line of a local football field and sort of do what needs to be done. That would be that would be good. Anyway,
yeah.
We have somehow kicked the can down the road of the most despicable part of this story. We have not yet hit the most despicable part of the story. I know everything that we've already talked about is bad. This is so much worse than any of that, this final little point that he gets in here. I'm going to do my best to not work myself up into a frenzy here as I read through this. I'm just going to try and power through, and then we will throw some tomatoes at Ross. But perhaps the most pressing issue, sure to arise within the new 12-team bracket, is a lowly ranked G5 champion's inclusion pushing out a Power League team ranked in the top 12. Only 3 times in the last 10 years where the top 12 ranked teams have all made the field. Again, these are not objective rankings. These are your rankings. That's not my problem. In 2022, Tulane, ranked number 16, would have advanced into the playoff as the Group of Five's highest ranked champion. The 12-seeded Green Wave would have pushed out 12th-ranked Washington. I don't fucking care about 2022 Washington. How could you?
Who cares?
They went like 10-3. I don't give a fuck. In 2019, number 15 Memphis, the G5's highest ranked champion, would have gotten a bid over Notre Dame, Penn State, and Utah. Oh no! I don't get to watch Sean Clifford and 2019 Penn State in the playoff? He's not picking great examples here of like, oh, a team that was just outside of the top 12 would have replaced a team that sucked. Okay. That doesn't sound like that big of a problem to me. They were 3 spots off, and the other options are fucking Notre Dame and Penn State. Okay. That's not a problem. Okay, I'll do it. I agree. In 2015, Navy would have earned the G5 bid, which would have been fucking sick. Could you imagine letting Navy into this goddamn thing? Now you have to prepare for these guys.
Hell yeah,
good
dude.
Luck. Would have earned the G5 bid into the field as the number 21st ranked team in the country. Last year, number 23 ranked Liberty would have gotten
it. Did he write number 21st?
Yeah, he wrote number 21st ranked. And then later in the sentence, he wrote number 23 ranked and did the same sort of dash between. I don't really know. I don't really know.
Maybe some style guide, but that's fucking stupid.
That's a strange way to do that. I don't know what style guide would have you doing that. It's an interesting one. And then he includes here in the parenthetical, of course, Oregon beat that team 45-6 in the Fiesta Bowl, by the way, which is really important, and it matters a lot. Bowl games, of course, still matter the same amount, and they're great reflections of a team's overall ability. That is for sure. Continues, the latest realignment wave has left the G5 as a weakened division. Again, who did that? I wonder. We're all trying to find who did that. Its most high-resourced programs, Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati, are now in the Big 12. SMU is in the ACC. none of those... Hey, real quick, just want to point this out. None of those four teams that you just named were in the examples that you listed earlier, which is strange. Tulane, Memphis, Navy, those are all still G5 teams. Maybe if you're writing this, you might want to include the years that any of those teams would have gotten in before mentioning how devastating it is to lose them. anyway, SMU is now in the ACC.
I hate this guy.
The selection committee will be faced with the real possibility that no G5 team, even in its best champion, is ranked. They don't have to be because they set the rankings. The question emerged during the bracket exercise, and Hancock confirmed that the protocol is for the committee to choose the best G5 champion among the five league winners, a G5 ranking of sorts. So they're asking that question during the bracket exercise. Right now, they're asking that. They don't know that. They didn't know what the protocol was, that five teams got in guaranteed if they won championships, and that there were only four power leagues. They did not know that the fifth one would then go to a champion that isn't from one of the power leagues. They had no idea. And then the story doesn't end here, but what we're going to read does end here. Imagine a G5 champion that is not ranked in the top 25 earning a bid over more than 10 power conference programs ranked higher than it. It could happen. Sankey reminded reporters after the bracket exercise that such a circumstance is the result of the format decision to award auto bids to the top five conference champions instead of the top four. Once again, you gave the mouse the cookie. He's not going to leave you alone. Greg Sankey's not going to stop asking for more cookies. You can't satisfy these guys. Giving one spot to a team that isn't in the SEC or the Big Ten is too much. That is apparent.
Yeah, so a league is going to get four or five bids every year. They find it so objectionable.
Yeah, over more than 10 power conference programs ranked higher than it. How could you possibly?
Okay.
How
could don't you? Don't go 9-3. That's not my problem.
I just don't. How could you possibly care about that? I really do not. I do not know. Like the level, it is foreign to me. The level of greed required to have somebody write this, to have somebody express this thought earnestly. Oh no! What if the number 12? What if a number 12 ranked Auburn team that went 9-3 and lost by 50 points to every good team that it played? What if they missed out because an undefeated Mountain West champion got in as the worst seed and has to go play at the number 5 seed, which is presumably like Georgia, but it lost in the SEC championship game to Alabama or something? I don't care. How could anybody care about that? I don't think it's asking too much to say that half of the sport should be represented at least a little bit in the championship that is played by the sport. I don't think that that's a crazy thing to be asking. I don't know how you can take these guys seriously if this is what they think that. It's a debacle to have the number 15 team in instead of the number 12 team because the number 15 team actually won its conference and didn't go 9-3. That's who we're dealing with here. This is the minds that we're working against, and the people who are set to determine the current and future of the sport. It's comical level of incompetence and blatant greed from everybody from Ross, who, like, I know you don't shoot the messenger, but I sure would love to to print this, to run this stuff, to run this uncritically, and to even lean into it and say things like, oh, Liberty lost in the Fiesta Bowl in the portal era when half of their team was gone and half of Oregon's team was gone and nobody fucking cared about it. Who cares? It's a bowl game. They're not real anymore. We killed those.
You guys killed those too. Yeah. God. And now you want to use them as evidence just to back your point. It fucking sucks, dude.
What about,
it really
like,
does suck.
What about the times that that didn't happen? What about when UCF beat Auburn? What about that? What about when Tulane, the Tulane team that you were so upset that would have gotten in over 12th-ranked Washington, what about when they took it to USC? What about when they beat them? Was that, did that not count because it was a bowl game and those aren't real except for if the G5 team loses? Like, what about regular season games where that happens to good teams, to good power conference teams, and they get beat by good G5 teams? Are those not real either because we said so? No, that doesn't count. That wasn't real. Like, it is just the brazen, unbalanced nature of the people running this sport is sinister enough on its own, but then they have the gall to go and fucking complain about it. That it's, well, they're not letting us be unbalanced enough. They being us, because we signed the agreement, were the ones who set the format entirely. It was just us. We're not allowing ourselves to be unbiased enough that, you know, that we could satisfy our own desires. Having five teams from my conference is good, but I'd love to have six. And if I could sacrifice some team that is from a part of the sport that's never, ever been represented in the national picture, ever, then I would gladly do that, because it would be such a shame if the number 13 team got in over the number 12 team. I would kill myself if that happened. That's who we're dealing with here. That's these people.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people think this mindset of like, oh, once we have the 12-team playoff, or, you know, the 17, the 16-team playoff, whatever you want to call it, people are going to stop complaining that the 12th ranked team didn't get in. Like, it's not going to be valid anymore. And it's like, a lot of fans will view it that way. Yeah. And they're going to use it as a way to shut you up. But the real people who are complaining about it is the Power Four commissioners are going to get pissed off if the 12th ranked Power Four team isn't in over the first ranked G5 team. Like, they will get pissed about that. They'll be angry about it. They're doing it right now. They're trying to change the rules so it doesn't happen. They're the ones complaining about it. Most fans won't. Yeah, they're going to think your critiques are illegitimate about the system now, because, oh, 12 teams in. If you can't make the 12 teams, you surely must suck. But the rules are set up so you can't do it. It's based on their subjective rankings and not any kind of real rules if they get rid of this fifth champion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, I'm vibrating with anger over this, that this was run, and that these are the people who are to be taken seriously in the sport that you know, that I love. And it's harder and harder every day to love the sport. And it sucks. It sucks. And I know that this is a sentiment that we have, you know, kind of been made to express basically all off season with this. And that sucks too, that we can't even really, it's not fun. It's not fun to talk about college football. And it's hard to see it getting any better. It sucks. It sucks. It's, I don't really know how to describe the feeling. I think probably people listening to this understand what I mean when I say there's a feeling in like the pit of my stomach about the sport that I love, and a sport that you know, I've spent years of my life talking about and thinking about and watching and caring about, that it is careening down the path that it is careening down. It's just it's hard and it's not fun, and I really don't like it, and I wish it would stop.
Yeah, I wish there were adults in the room. I really do. I just wish that there was someone who was taking it seriously and cared about the sport and loved it and knew it.
Yeah.
But it ain't happening, man. And it's not the guys we have.
Nope. Well, we've got some guys who we do like. We're going to talk about these guys here as a mood lifter, as a way to make ourselves feel better after this. We're going to play Where Is This Guy? I have collected a group of mostly former head coaches, I think almost exclusively former head coaches, who have since been deposed from their role as a head coach and have gone on to, I guess you could say bigger and better things. In most cases, in almost every case, much worse, smaller and worse things. And I just want to roll through here a real murderer's row of guys to remember and where they are now. And as we go through, I'm going to have you try to guess where you think this guy is, if you don't know already. These are in alphabetical order. Let's jump right in. Former Kansas head coach David Beatty. Ryan, where's this guy?
I don't know, like Arizona State.
No, he's the, I mean, honestly, not that far off. He's the wide receivers coach at FAU right now. That's what David Beatty is currently up to.
Okay.
He's on Tom's staff down there.
Sure.
Former UConn head coach, I believe former high profile Notre Dame defensive coordinator, Bob Diaco. Where's Bob at?
Didn't he get hired in the SEC? Isn't he an analyst somewhere?
He is an analyst in the SEC. Do you know where?
Notre Dame connection. I'm just gonna dart throw at LSU.
Yes, defensive analyst at LSU, Bob
Let's
Diaco.
fucking
Good one.
go.
How about Jeff Collins, who's at Georgia Tech and Temple? He is.
All right, I know this
You
one.
know this one?
he's at North Carolina, right? He's the
Yep.
DC there.
Yep. He's the new defensive coordinator, I
Yeah.
think recently hired back in like January. He's the defensive coordinator at North Carolina. What a cool group of
I'm
guys
sure
they've
that'll
got
go
out there.
awesome.
They have
Yeah.
such a fun group of people in that staff. Just a real nightmare to have to deal with anybody there. How about
They have one really good defensive end, right? They have Cayman Rucker came back, didn't he?
I think
He's
so.
good.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Hopefully that's enough for Jeff. Jeff, you've got one defensive end to work with. Good luck. Figure it out. Okay, this one, I don't believe he was ever a head coach at the college level, but he is a name that we would certainly know. He's a guy we've talked about on the show before. He's a guy I'm sure you have plenty of familiarity with. Probably best known for being the, I think, quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator at Michigan, in the mid-2010s when Jim Harbaugh wasn't really all that interested in playing offense. Where's Pep Hamilton at?
Oh, wasn't he in the NFL?
I believe he was briefly in the NFL. I think he also had a stint in one of the other professional leagues that was trying to get, its footing. I think he was like the head coach of some made up team, like the Renegades or something like that. Currently, he is not employed by any football entity within an actual program or franchise. He's working for the NFL Network. That's where Pep is right now. Love to see him. Love to see him back in the cut. We love to see, we love to see Pep in the cut. How about Will Healy, former Charlotte head coach, one-time boy wonder. He was 14 years old when he led Austin Peay to the FCS playoffs. Now, where is recent college graduate Will Healy?
Dude, I don't have the first fucking clue. I have no idea.
I think you're going to start to notice a
Is he
little.
working? Is he working for the hoopla and Wyatt Crocher?
No, I think you're going to notice something of a trend here with some of the staffs that these guys are on. Will Healy is currently an analyst at UCF. So that is what he is up to. He's an offensive analyst for UCF. I don't know if you would even remember this guy. How about Mike Jenks, who was the he was briefly an
Hey, can we go
extreme.
back really quick? By the
Yeah,
way,
sure, go
there's a
ahead.
riff I wanted to make.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard he's the front man for the 1975.
Okay. I don't really know what that means.
The guy, the
Is that
same youth
is
with
it
the band, the 1975.
is that the Matty Healy? Is that
Yeah, it's
guy? Oh.
Matt Healy. Yeah, Matt
Okay.
Healy. He dated Taylor Swift. Yeah.
Yeah, I did know about that. Okay. I didn't know of whom he
Yeah.
was.
He
I yeah.
got dumped by the biggest pop star in the world because of Cumtown.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's also why Will Healy got fired from Charlotte. So, guys with that
Yeah.
last name, they should probably just stop going on the show. I don't know why you do that in the first place.
Yeah.
Mike Jinks is up next here. He was the head coach at Bowling Green. He was, I think, famously an absolute disaster head coach at Bowling Green. They hired just the cheapest guy from an air raid program that they could possibly find, which made no sense ever, and it did not work. Where's Mike Jinks at now?
I'm gonna guess he's at like Central Michigan.
No, he's currently the running backs coach at Houston, interestingly enough. He's back in the state of Texas. I think he's working for Willie Fritz, so good for Mike Jenks. How about Seth Luttrell, who's the head coach at North Texas? Longtime Big 12 guy. Where's Seth Luttrell at, do you think?
I believe he has enlisted in the Marines.
No, he's actually the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma.
Oh, that's way worse.
Yeah, that's way worse. It's so much worse to be doing that.
Are they're gonna suck shit this year, right? Like he's a pretty big idiot, Seth Luttrell.
Yeah,
And
it's
Jackson Arnold, their quarterback, is like really talented, but a huge bozo also.
yeah, we love that. Just a room of bozos. Really good. Just just a dumb quarterback room. Speaking of, how about Chad Morris, who was the head coach at SMU, briefly the head coach at Arkansas. That did not go super well. Formerly of the Dabo Swinney tree. I suppose he still is technically. You don't ever really get that stink off you. Where do you think Chad Morris is right now?
I also know this one. Isn't he back at Arkansas?
No, I believe he's currently the wide receivers coach at Texas State. I think that was the most recent update.
Oh, man, I thought I read. Maybe it was last season he was back at Arkansas.
I think most recently before this, he was an analyst at Clemson, which is pretty funny. He's the wide receivers coach.
I really thought he went back to Arkansas.
I don't know.
At some point.
That would be an interesting announcement to make if you're Arkansas. Hey, do you guys remember Chad Morris? He's an analyst now. that's a tough one for both parties, I think. That's not super appealing PR wise. He's the wide receivers coach at Texas State. That's a pretty tough one. It's a tough couple of years here.
Yeah, good
for Chad.
It's a
Morris.
Good staff though, right? Everyone likes UJ Kinney.
Yeah.
Yeah. But pretty tough to be like the eighth guy in the totem pole for the guy who's just a smarter version of you, but 17 years younger.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That's not what you want. That's not what you want. I'm the closer in my wife's pen of boyfriends. Actually, no, I'm the setup guy. I come in the seventh inning. I give you a couple at bats.
Yeah, she doesn't let me penetrate, but it's still pretty fun.
I'm a left-handed specialist. You know, you bring me in whenever you... You need a left-handed specialist, I guess. bullpen of boyfriends is a good concept. That's really good. Oh man, getting the phone call on the old-timey phone that they've got in there. Call your name and you like point to yourself. You're like, me? She wants me?
Yeah, the your walk-up song is Jesse's Girl.
Yeah. No, I'm doing Sandman. I've got Sandman running in there. I gotta get some warm-up strokes in. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Oh, fuck.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Jeremy Pruitt is up next. Tennessee fame for Jeremy Pruitt, one of the most notable assholes in the history of the sport. just known across the sport as being a guy who everybody hates. Where do you think Jeremy Pruitt is right now?
Okay, I remember riffing about this last offseason.
Okay.
That he hires a gym coach last year, right?
Yes.
Is he still a gym coach?
Yeah, he's the PE instructor at Plainview High School, which I believe is his high school alma mater. I think his dad,
is also on the staff there. Coach.
Yeah, that would be, God. That would be that's a real nightmare situation, I think, being in the gym class taught by Jeremy Pruitt. I don't imagine that maybe he's really good at it. What if he's really, really good at it? What if he's just like, he's great with the kids, you know, he just loves.
What if he's teaching people how to like go for like the sensitive spots in dodgeball?
Yeah.
Like, look, if you ear hole him, you can really fuck him up.
I am now also imagining, because usually PE teachers, it's not just in the gym. You do have like a classroom role as well, unless he's serving basically in the same capacity that like a professional lacrosse player serves in, where he just needs a second job and he's the guy who's in the gym who does it. If he's the PE teacher as well, you do have some students in Plainview High School who have learned about sex from Jeremy Pruitt, which is so, so troubling to think about. That is, yeah. I think, honest to God, that might be the worst person on earth who you could learn that from.
We should really start like, I wonder if there's any like real aspiring students who are like just graduated like this year and already have LinkedIn somehow. I wonder if we could find any and reach out to them.
I have a lot of questions.
See if we can get interviews about that.
I have a lot of questions about your gym teacher. That's a fun conversation to have. Oh, I'm sure that would be received really well. Last one here. Willie Taggart. You know where Willie Taggart is at now? You might, because I think you have a better awareness of the group that he operates in than I do, certainly.
Yeah, he was with the Ravens last I checked.
Yes, he's the running backs coach of the Ravens. I figured that we would close on one that I would guess you'd probably know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Willie Taggart with the Ravens.
How did I do? So what did I get? How many did I get? Like three of them? Four of them?
I think you got two or three, I think, if I remember right.
I got Jeff Collins.
Yeah, you got Jeff Collins.
I got,
you got Bob Diaco
yeah. through like cross-pollination.
You got Pruitt and you got Taggart, I think. So that's four. That's not too bad.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'll take that. I'll take that all day.
Yeah. I mean, I really just kind of culled the list from like 2016 head coaches who sucked. Like, where are they now? So that's pretty good, honestly. It's been 8 years. We're still keeping track of these guys. We'll never forget about you, Mike Jinks. We know where you are, and we're rooting for you. You have our support. Yeah. Fun to take a spin around looking at some old guys who we love. All right, you want to do this Colorado thing here, or do you want to end it here? Because we're at an hour, so we could save the Colorado thing if you want to, or do you want to talk about this now?
Yeah, we might as well. Whatever, let's just knock it out.
All right, story in The Athletic. I'm pretty sure if you are online in any capacity, and certainly if you're listening to this show, you have probably seen the story already. I'm vamping here while I actually load the headline and the person who wrote it. Yeah, this is from Max Olson writing in The Athletic. What happened to Deion Sanders' Colorado castoffs, revisiting a record-setting exodus? So this has been quite the point of conversation this week online. The discourse, I would say, this time around with Deion, as is always the case with Deion and with Colorado, is just very annoying and not really terribly productive. Everybody is seemingly pretty well set in their ways at this point about what they think about Deion, and I don't really know why every couple of months we have to have a new thing that we talk about on, you know, everybody gets to share their own view on Deion that has not changed and will never change. Seems like a waste of everybody's time, but that's welcome to college football. That's what we do here. And we've got a new story that has sparked that debate anew. I was just thinking last week, this is funny. I was just thinking last week, man, it's been a while since Deion and Colorado have been trying to get themselves in the news. I wonder if something is going to come of that pretty soon that they're going to be start getting back into the conversation as we ramp up here into May and moving on. And sure enough, less than a week after I had that thought to myself while washing the dishes, we've got a new thing to talk about. With Colorado, they are nothing if not consistent. Story starts here. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's last name. Chase Sowell. We're gonna go with Sowell. Chase Sowell walked into Colorado's football facility on the Sunday after the 2023 spring game and saw more than a dozen teammates lined up against a wall. that's an ominous start to the story. That can go a lot of different ways. Yeah. As each player entered the head coach's office and emerged within minutes enraged or in tears, the second-year receiver nervously pondered his fate. Quote, "We knew it was going to happen, but we didn't know it was going to happen that soon," Sowell said. I'm not really in the business of shitting on these kids, and I'm not going to do that a ton as we talk through this story. We've given our stance on Deion. I will say, if this happened after the 2023 spring game, I don't know that that would be qualified as soon. That's pretty far along in the process, right? That's like, it's not like this was the day after he was hired.
It's his earliest possible chance to do it, right? Like, the kids couldn't transfer out until shortly after the spring game. Like, I don't know. Would they feel better about it if he did it, like,
in June?
There's no other alternative, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if you want to find it, like, it basically what he's saying, you know, they'll get more into this, that you're never going to play here.
Yeah.
I don't think you're good enough. Then when he took over, based on when he took over, his only opportunity to do this was in the spring window. He gave you a whole spring to play, to evaluate. Look, there's some other things they're going to say in here about his communication with him. That sucks.
Yeah.
But I don't really criticize him for doing this at this point in time. That's when all these meetings happen. All of these players have review meetings with their coaches at every program afterwards. Now, is his manner, like, is his bedside manner good? No, it's dog shit.
Yeah.
But we can get more into that soon.
Yeah, that's really kind of the crux of the story as we'll talk through. It's like, I think Deion is an asshole. I think Deion is being an asshole about this purposefully because it's part of his character, and like, he's even doing this in the wake of the story coming out. Of course he is. But like, some of the critiques about like the timing of this or the process of which, like, oh, he did this with a bunch of guys all at once on the same day, it's just like I don't really know what the alternative is, because it's not like
lining them up in front of each other. That's pretty tough. You shouldn't do that.
That's kind of shitty. Like that's not good. And the way that he conducts himself is pretty nasty and brazen. But also, like, I don't really know that it's. I can't really get all that upset about, like, oh, guys were told that they should probably find a new home because they're not going to play here after the spring game. That seems like plenty of time to come.
Yeah,
to that
I've
decision.
Watched college football before this year.
Yeah, that's. I don't think that's that crazy. It continues here. Deion Sanders given his Power 5 head coaching shot in December 2022 after three successful years at Jackson State, had promised a clean house. He vowed talented transfers were on the way to replace anyone unprepared to play for him, and less than 24 hours after the Buffaloes ballyhooed ESPN-televised spring showcase, Sanders informed 20 scholarship players they were moving on. Quote from Sowell, "He didn't sugarcoat it. He was telling me, you're coming off injury. I don't think you will be one of the guys we need to start this year. We need guys that are going to be ready to play now." Sanders didn't need to use the word cut. Sowell understood it was time to pack his bags into the transfer portal and find a new home. So again, sort of throwing in some of the timing stuff here about, like, oh, 20 players after the spring game. Again, it's not, I would rather you do it then than in June when they have a much worse chance of finding another spot, right? And if you're gonna do it with
or can't
like that's sort of, it doesn't really seem that bad to see what they have to offer in the spring and then, you know, let guys know if they're going to or not going to play. And like the number of players, again, like I don't really, that's sort of a sticking point in the story. They were really bad. They were really, really bad. And this is something we talked about when this was happening last year. I don't think it's that crazy to move on from a bunch of guys from a really bad team if you don't want to continue to be a bad team. It's not, I just don't really understand that part, why that's such a like a sticking point for people. That's what you do. That's why you hired him. That's why you brought him in, is to do that. It's not,
yeah,
it's not like he didn't say he was going to do this, and it's not like that's uncommon. It's an uncommon number, but it's also like that's the situation in college football right now. That's what they've done. that's the system that they have wrought. So it continues here. First year, and it sort of touches on this point. First year coaches running off underperforming players are commonplace in college football. Dumping 20 in one day is not. By the end of spring, 53 scholarship players transferred out of the program. My norms. It's norms, and I just don't really care about norms all that much. I'm gonna be honest with you. Like he is as a guy, the way that he is conducting this, as we will continue to get into, is shitty. But getting rid of 20 in one day, it's not like there's like some rule for the amount of guys that you can cut in one day. It's not like, what is the difference between doing 5 across 4 days or 20 in one day? What does it matter? The end result is the same. What does it matter that you did 20 in one day?
Yeah, I agree. I don't really give a shit about it.
Yeah, so it carries on here. Quarterback Owen McCown arrived at Colorado in 2022 with a freshman class, and I'm cutting out some stuff that I just didn't really think was all that interesting or necessary. But arrived at Colorado in 2022 with a freshman class desperate to turn around a program that had 8 losing seasons over the past decade. The son of Minnesota Vikings assistant Josh McCown started 3 games as a freshman during the brutal 2022 season. Coach Carl Durrell was fired after an 0-5 start. The Buffs got blown out almost weekly. McCown says, quote, "Going through that rough season made us all close. And then, obviously, it all went away. Sanders walked into his first Colorado team meeting on December 4th, 2 packs all eyes on me on the speakers, and delivered his first warning." Quote from Deion, "I'm coming to restore, to replace, to re-energize some of y'all that are salvageable. I'm not going to lie. Everybody that's sitting their butt in the seat ain't going to have a seat when we get back." Sowell, a redshirt freshman from Houston, was unfazed. Quote, "I don't think he was being a dick about it. I think he was just being straight up. Prove to me that you can play." And then it continues here. McCown skipped the team meeting. He was the 3rd Colorado player to enter the transfer portal going to UTSA, where he could start this fall. Why does he need to be quoted in this then? He didn't even go to the meeting. He skipped it. He was already gone. That's you can't yeah. skip the meeting and then be like, oh, he blew up our culture. You didn't go to the meeting. You gotta go to the meeting first, at least, if you're gonna do that. It's not like this game is some big
That's
surprise
a you
to
thing.
You. Yeah, the freshman class that it was so close was bad. I don't know what to tell you. It's a zero sum game. It's sort of strange to harp on some of this stuff. There is, and again, it kind of gets to the same point here. Sowell stayed to battle it out, but after season-ending surgery for a torn labrum, it was a tough time to be at his best. Skipping ahead, it didn't take long for returning Colorado players to figure out the narrative. Quarterback Shadur Sanders, wide receiver cornerback Travis Hunter, and 19 more transfers were brought in for spring practice. They were the stars of the show, quote from Sowell. We felt like it was us versus them instead of all of us together. That's the best way I can put it. The new guys were going against the players that had already been there. It wasn't a good environment to be in. It wasn't a team environment. His freshman class was an inseparable group. The players lived on campus together, dined together, and played pickup basketball together. They would return to the dorms at night that spring and talk openly about their predicament. What do we do? So I'm gonna pause there. That's just what college football is, guys. That's just what college football is. This is not like, I don't know what you were expecting. It's gonna be competitive. It's college football. That's what the whole thing is. That's the whole sport. It's not inseparable to have a group that lives on campus and goes and plays basketball. That's just what college football players do. They hang out together.
It's
they fucking live
group,
in the same room.
It's what any group of young men do when they go to college or women.
Yeah,
like you find bonding activities. You do things together. It's pick up basketball or go to lift weights or. You know, like my group went to the diner at like 12 a.m. like four nights a week. Like,
yeah.
Like you just find shit to do together because, you're in a new place away from your parents for the first time and you're bonding with each other.
Yeah.
And these guys, they had a benefit of like, you know, it'd be the same thing. It's like if you had your best friends all work together and had a job, all went to class together and had a job together and did everything together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course. That's just what you do. You just hang out with other guys. Like, who else gets it?
Yeah, but I don't think it's some great crime to split up that group. That's how every football team is everywhere. They're all like that. It's not like, I don't really know. And they're all competitive in the spring, especially when you bring in new guys. Like, that's sort of, it's like, it's not really supposed to be like super fun. I don't think it's not, that's not really the deal of it. Practice is usually fairly competitive when it comes to football, especially football at this level. I think that Dion probably doesn't exactly do a great job of doing anything other than that. I would guess that it is kind of a hostile environment in that room because that's the way that Dion is. But also, I think there was a lot of reaction to this story that kind of just came from reading the headline and then maybe seeing one screenshot of it that did not necessarily align with the fact that the story itself doesn't really say all that much other than like a few anecdotes that are like, okay, yeah, this guy seems like an asshole, and which I think we we knew that. I think we already kind of knew that about Dion. And this this next little anecdote I think fits that pretty well. So it says here, on the morning of April 23rd, their group text blew up. Players were called into exit meetings with Sanders and told they couldn't play at Colorado. One described the experience as going to see the Grim Reaper. Sowell's meeting was his first one-on-one conversation with the head coach. The following morning, Sowell said, players were locked out of Colorado's football facility. They couldn't grab their things from the locker room. They couldn't grab a meal at the training table. Quote, when you're gone, you're gone, Sowell said. That stinks, right? Like that sucks. The following morning does make me think that you probably could have grabbed your things if you just when you were leaving that day. But like, yeah, you should probably tell them that. Like, hey, your key cards aren't going to work after today because you're not on the team anymore. You should probably grab your stuff. Like that sucks.
I'm sure. By the way, I bet you could probably ask like one of your friends who's still on the team, hey, can I go get my stuff? Would you mind grabbing that for me?
Yeah.
Could I come in real quick?
Yeah.
I don't think that'd be that hard.
No, I don't think that would be that hard. It's like a shitty thing to do with no notice. You should give guys a little bit of time to do that, but also it's not that crazy. And it carries on here and kind of illuminates something that I think we're sort of hitting on of like So it says, and I'll get to that point as I read this. Sowell wanted to go where he could play as many snaps as possible. He picked ECU. It was a big move across the country for a Texas kid who knew hardly anything about the school, but he connected with receivers coach Dyrell Roberts and felt welcomed in his first team meeting with the Pirates. They needed him, too. Sowell emerged as ECU's number one wide receiver, leading the team with 47 receptions for 622 yards and a touchdown. Sowell says he's happier than ever. His mom says he's back to being his true self at ECU. A year later, he remains in touch with his freshman class in the group text. That sounds fine. That doesn't sound like a bad outcome. That sounds like kind of the ideal outcome of this, is that a guy who probably wasn't going to play at a power school drops down to a level where he is going to play, and then he plays, and he's happy about that. I don't really, it doesn't really read to me as like a bad thing. That's sort of the way that the system was designed to function, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, what else do you expect? What else do you think happens in college football if you don't think this happens?
Would you rather that he sits on the bench at Colorado? Is that better? is that better? Cause it's nicer, right? Like, I don't really know that that is nicer. I would actually say that that's a nastier thing to do than just telling guys that they're not going to play there, right? Because then you're wasting their time. You only have so much time of college eligibility. Yeah.
I will say, like, we talked about on the board, like, there was a player at Ohio State who did this. Like, there's a guy they told, I guess the really funny response, there's a guy they told that basically, hey, you're never going to play here, dude. Like, if you want to play somewhere, you should go look for another job. And he was like, no, that's cool. Like, I like it here. Like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And then basically, I think for some guys, that's the dream job. But the reason you have to be a dick is you only get 85 scholarships if you're going to manage them. You have to get non-performers out of the program as fast as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, like, again, this sort of the bulk of what we're going to say here. Like, I don't really like the way that he's gone about it personally. I don't like the personality that he has put onto this. And there's like a story here later on about, I'll skip ahead to this, about this guy, Jake Wiley, who was an offensive lineman. He stayed through the spring to finish his degree, see if he fit with the staff. And it says here, on cut day, Wiley received an ominous text. Quote, in our O-line group chat, one of the offensive line coaches texted the group and said, good luck, fellas, Wiley said. And then he just removed all of them. It said these five people were removed from the chat. We were like, huh? What happened? That's a crazy-ass way to do that. That's not good. You can't be cutting a guy via group chat. You gotta put in a tiny bit more effort than that. That's a tough group chat to be in. Just good luck, fellas, and then you're removed from the group chat. That's tough.
That's really good, dude.
That's tough. Yeah.
You can't be doing that.
No, it's just sort of like you can't have guys do it. Coach is gonna have to bring these guys in personally, I think, to talk to them. You can't just be doing that. That's a crazy ass way to do that. So you've been removed from the group chat for having bad vibes. You're gonna have to go elsewhere.
Yeah, look, no, we just don't have any space in the group chat. Apple's actually told us that if you don't message back right now, they're gonna delete your account. So sorry about that.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. So 2 days after those guys entered the portal, Wiley joined them. He said players who survived the cut still felt unwanted and expendable. He was one of seven returning starters who departed that spring along with, and it names the guys, quote, from Sanders, let me tell you this, because this is something you may not know. He said this on the Dan Patrick Show. Maybe 20 kids we may have sat down with and said, we may head in a different direction. I don't know if this is going to work out. Everybody else quit. They quit. You can't hold me responsible. That is a classic Dion quote. I don't know if that's entirely true, but that is like pretty much exactly what this guy is describing. And quitting is maybe not necessarily the way that I would say it, because like that's kind of harsh, and they didn't quit football. They just left. But like, I mean, yeah, some guys aren't going to really go with that culture that he wants to bring there. This is not like crazy. This is not some crazy thing that's only happening at Colorado. When you bring in a new coach, sometimes the personality is not going to fit guys who are already there, especially if the personality is Deion Sanders. That seems about right. I don't really know what anybody was expecting. That's why you hired him. That's the entire reason you brought him in, is because he's Deion Sanders.
It's in fact the almost the only thing you have going for your program, right? Besides Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders being really good, which is cool. The only other way, and I don't think this is even going to work, but their only effort to try this was, hey, we have a really big personality at our school. Maybe we'll get some recruits from that.
Yeah.
And have they gotten any good high school recruits from that? No. Have they gotten, you know, some good transfer portal players? Yeah, maybe. Like, they've gotten some good receivers, at least. They got, like, one good defensive end. There are some players they're getting. I don't know if it's going to work, but yeah, that's the whole reason you brought him there, is because he's Deion Sanders. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You signed up for primetime.
Yeah, and it continues here a little bit. We're gonna close this out here shortly with a closing anecdote on Wiley that I don't really know how this connects to Colorado even a little bit. I don't know how this could be perceived as anybody other than Wiley's decision. It says, Wiley was overwhelmed by the number of calls he received upon entering the portal and narrowed his list to UCLA, Duke, and Purdue. He flew to Los Angeles to watch a spring practice and was told the Bruins needed a tackle. Wiley loved the campus and liked staying in the Pac-12. It was an easy decision. He didn't learn he was moving to guard until the day before preseason camp. That's a lot of new technique to learn in addition to a new offensive system. Wiley rotated in at right guard in UCLA's first four games, but then saw his playing time drop off considerably. That's a UCLA problem. That's a Chip Kelly issue. I don't really know why that would be in this story. That's like, it's what was the alternative, that he was going to sit on the bench at Colorado? Is that better than getting dicked around by Chip Kelly? I don't really understand. Like, okay, UCLA lied to this guy. That sucks. That's shitty of UCLA to do. But is it, it's a weird story. It's a weird story where it's like building to something salacious, and then there's really never anything salacious in it.
Yeah.
And it also includes this, and we'll close on this little kicker sentence. This is not the actual end of the story, but it's a really long story. It says here, for many of his fellow ex-Buffs, this was a common issue. Among the 37 transfers who departed after Sanders was hired and landed at FBS schools, 23 did not start a game last season. That's why you brought him in. That's why you brought him in, is because of that, is because 23 of the 37 guys who landed at other D1 schools didn't play. That's why. That was why you do this. That's why you manage the roster. Is he an asshole about it? Yes. Is this, like, a crime? Is this like, some disaster? I can't believe that he would do this. No. That's what you do if you want to have, like, the really good teams in college football aren't just keeping along guys who aren't playing or doing anything. That's not really how you operate in this business. Does it suck? Yeah, of course it sucks. But they're not limited that they can't go and play right away anymore, which is what used to happen, is that you would cut a guy and he would have to sit on the bench for a year for another school, which really sucks. And like, it's just not really, I just don't know how everybody cares about this so much. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me. He's an asshole. This is not anything new. I don't really know that he's like, I don't know that he's being like super, super evil here. This is pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say that, like, the way him and his kids have handled it on Twitter since is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Although I will say there was a very funny one that happened just before we started recording.
Okay.
Did you see Deion Sanders Jr.'s tweet?
No.
To one of our favorite friends in the media?
Oh, no, I did not see this. What was this?
Well, an old friend of ours, Mike Farrell, tweeted in response to an On3 article. This is one thin-skinned family. Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders Jr. quote tweeted and said, "You so bitch made, dog. It don't even make sense. You wrote multiple articles talking down the family, but when we finally respond, we're quote thin-skinned." I will say Deion Sanders Jr. calling Mike Farrell bitch made, really good. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that is that is really, really good.
I did enjoy that part. The shit of like Shedeur talking shit to like a true freshman walk on.
Yeah.
Come on. Can't be doing that.
It doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't seem necessary. It doesn't seem especially wise or just like necessary to, you know, to do. I don't really know why you would need to do that. it seems like pretty much every part of the discourse about this story is based on really nothing that's in the actual story, which is the kind of the point that I wanted to hammer home when talking about this. Read the stories that everybody is talking about before you react to them, I think would be probably a good model to use when it comes to discussing college football, because there's really nothing in here that is all that crazy. And I don't think that there's anything in here, like I said at the beginning of this segment, that would change anybody's mind on Deion. If you don't like Deion, I do not blame you. I think that he is a shitty person. I objectively, I think he's a bad guy. And I think that the way that he behaves is nasty. And that he is self-serving in a way that is more blatant and brazen than most college football coaches, even though they have the same opinions and views as he does. If you do like him, this isn't going to change your mind either, because you are already on board with the, my way or the highway. We're going to win games, and we can't do that with the bad players who were here. I think that both parties are correct in their assessments of Deion Sanders, and that basically what you see in him and in Colorado is whatever you already saw. I don't know what the point is. I don't know what the point is of everybody arguing this every couple of months when there's a new story about how Deion Sanders is doing exactly what he said he wanted to do.
He's always been an asshole. It's his whole thing.
This is his thing. That's the Deion. That's his thing. I just don't. We're all so excited to just have a thing to talk about that's not expansion or realignment or the destruction of the sport or something like that, I guess. But like, I don't know. I think it's probably best to save all of the fervor about Deion for when there is football being played instead of for when there's a pretty much a nothing article. I know nobody's actually going to do that. That's not what we do. Everybody likes to yell at each other online all the time. It seems like maybe for this one, maybe an outsized reaction to what is mostly just a story about how, like, yeah, a guy who probably wasn't going to play at Colorado ended up playing at ECU and it was fine, or playing at Austin Peay and then jumped back up to UTEP after this year and it was fine, or like went to UCLA and UCLA fucked him over and that's the end of it. It's like, okay, I don't really think that that's a huge deal. I don't think that that's anything. I don't think that that's like, we got to put this guy behind bars. It's just, That's pretty much the fallout from what he said he was going to do. I don't really know what anybody was expecting. This is what it looks like.
Yeah. it's Deion. I mean, like, yeah, it's the whole thing you sign up for. I don't know. We all know it. We get it. Like, you guys get it. You listen to this. You understand it. Respect to Colton for fighting a good fight online for his team. I really do understand why. I don't think you can ever convince people that Deion's not an asshole.
Yeah.
You can convince them that this is how the rest of college football operates too, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, or even not just that it's not that big of a deal, just that it's like, this is the sport that you like. This is what happens in the sport that you like. It's not, there's not a school that is winning that is immune to this. They're all doing this. They might be doing it more professionally.
I think mine should do it more.
Yeah, like that's what the sport is. And I don't know that it's like, I think it would be willfully ignorant to look at this and say, well, this is only happening here. If you like college football, this is a part of college football. And it's a nasty part. It's a part that's unpleasant, but it is ultimately a part of college football. I think you'd be trying to fool yourself if you think that this is exclusive to Colorado. Or that this story shines any light on that at all, which it really doesn't. And I don't really know that it was ever even intending to. I don't think that that was really Max Olsen's intention or his fault. I think a lot of people just took this and aggregated it and ran with it, and it has become this giant thing about something that is not really all that uncommon or even all that distinct, I think. We need something good to talk about in this sport. At some point, we're just going to do it ourselves.
We're just going to start doing preview content soon.
Yeah.
That'll be transfer portal is closed. The most of the transfers we've done in the next week from kids who have entered haven't picked a school yet.
Yeah.
It's it should all be over pretty soon. That's the good part. And then it's just real football for the next, at least we're talking about real football for the next few months, and then real football happens.
Yeah. That'll be good. And we can just ignore all of this shit. That'll be fun.
Yeah. I do want to, just before we close out the episode here, I didn't tell you this ahead of time, so I hope you don't mind, but I do want to kind of close on a serious note, which I'm sure a lot of you guys are watching the protest around the country right now about Gaza and university campuses, including at Ohio State, where I went, where you used to live, and a lot of other schools, obviously Columbia and UCLA have been in the news heavily. I know no one comes to this podcast for our political content, but I do want to say that if you have the means to do so, I strongly recommend donating to the Gaza Emergency Fund or the Palestine Red Crescent Society. The bombings in Rafah are increasing, and just things are getting really bad right there. And I know there's a lot of outrage, justifiably so, to the actions of the student protesters in terms of, the police responses to them, rather. I think that's good to see that and to witness it and to see what happens at home when that happens. But I do want to make sure folks kind of keep an eye on Gaza as well and everything happening there. And if you have the means to donate, please do so. It's getting worse every day, and the genocide is getting worse over there. So just want to say that at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Links to those funds will be in the description of this episode. For sure. We will close it out there, Ryan, unless you've got anything else. We'll be back soon to, maybe we'll just do an entire episode of remembering some guys. We'll just do that to make ourselves feel better.
Yeah. It's something to do. It might be nice. But we'll see you guys in the preview episode next week.